Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Friday, the last day of July in 2026, the 31st. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're doing well today. Sorry, coffee's up a little later this morning. I was playing catch up. I took yesterday off. Nice day off, too. Of course, went to the concert Wednesday night, Guns N' Roses. It was excellent. Had a really, really good time. Really good seats. Hung out with the wife. And then yesterday, contrary to popular belief, I wasn't sitting in my bed wishing for death because of copious amounts of alcohol consumed at the concert. I was moving in the heat, and that's actually pretty good for you when you if you've had a long night the night before. And it was more that it was late when I got back than anything. I mean, I don't think we went crazy with the Miller Lights or, as the wife likes to do, the vodka soda with a lime. We didn't really go, we're getting too old for that, but getting back at like 2 a.m., man, that was and then you get up early in this business to do things. I got a little bit behind, so I had to catch up this morning, but hit the rack early after moving all day yesterday. But you know, it's all good and we're all ready to go. Birdies with Beamer yesterday, and I got some takeaways. That's kind of going to be the topic today on Coffee. Shane Beamer, they have it's the media golf event. Lots of people there. Peter Burns, who I like a lot from the SEC Network, was there. Alyssa Lang was there. People from The Athletic were there. And then, of course, all of our media friends from Gamecock Central, David Cloninger from the Post and Courier. That's a heck of a dude there. You know, a lot of folks that we all know and love were out there playing golf at Cobblestone with Coach Shane Beamer and the staff. And you know, reviewing the press conference and everything he said, one thing that Beamer keeps coming back to, and this is really an intangible thing that coaches like to talk about. Coaches don't these days, and it's not just Shane, it's everybody in college football. I mean, you get some that love, like Will Muschamp loved to talk about ball. So did Nick Saban for that matter. You know, and they'll get into kind of the X's and O's and the Y's. And I like that as somebody that's kind of a helmet head that gets into stuff like that. But Beamer doesn't really do. He didn't really get into that kind of stuff. And look, Steve Spurrier didn't either. You know, Steve Spurrier wasn't sitting there going, well, this is called steamers and we do the slant there, and then he never talked about that. I guess he didn't want to. But a lot of coaches love talking intangibles. You know, this roster does this. And sometimes it comes across as coach speak. And it may, you know. And look, all of this stuff, the bottom line is winning or losing. I was catching up with a friend on Wednesday afternoon after I got off via text. And, you know, I said, well, you know, we were talking kind of big picture at South Carolina and what was going on, and Jeremiah Donati, who I think is doing a good job. And, you know, he mentioned, look, you gotta win. You know, that's the bottom line. And I agree completely. And I think, in my opinion, I think there's no reason why this team can't win this year. But that's true. You can have all the great NIL and roster spin that you want. You can build the best facilities. You can have great people, like as far as human being quality in the buildings, various buildings. And if you don't win, it all kind of falls onto deaf ears because in life, everything is an exchange, right? Everything is transactional. It shouldn't be, but it is. And so the expectations from the fan base and the people that support you, and the reason why college football, no matter what the TV execs say, is a multi-billion dollar industry is because of the fans and the support. If there was no audience, you know, if they didn't care, that they wouldn't you just line up and play like a high school. You charge $8 and everybody just goes in there and you smell the popcorn and you know, whatever. I mean, that's how it goes. I mean, small schools, that's how it goes. But when 80,000 people show up on a Saturday and millions more buy gear and join websites and listen to podcasts and all that good stuff, the expectation is that that's a sacrifice. That's a payment. You know, you're spending your money, you're spending your time, you're spending your emotions on it. One thing for you young folks out there, you'll find out when you You don't get too much older because I'm not decrepit. I talk about it all the time, but I'm not that old. When you get in your 40s and 50s, start thinking about time. And there's just a buffet, if you will, of things you can be spending your time on that are all productive. And you spend your time on the Gamecocks. That's something that you're not spending your time on. You can't be two places at once, or it's hard to have your attention on two or three things at once. And so you feel like you lose something when they lose, right? Or when they have a losing season. It's not like you never lose a game. But yeah, I mean, you have a losing season like last season, you feel like it's a massive waste of time. And I think that's why people get upset when they lose, because they feel, I don't want to say tricked, but bamboozled a little bit, or like they wasted time. And that pisses you off, right? You kind of wasted all this time and emotion and energy. And you only got so much of that in life. And so all the stuff about maturity and the intangibles, if you will, that's what we're going to talk about today. It falls on deaf ears when you don't win. And I wanted to make that clear right away, because sometimes when you talk about these subjects, they come across as Pollyanna-ish. I'll never forget, man. We had this guy when I was working at Rivals. He covered Ole Miss. He's a really good guy. Worked in junior colleges in Mississippi as a recruiting guy, and kind of was a, Ole Miss dude. So we brought him on to do our Ole Miss site. And he wrote this article. And this was back before our industry. We would never, you wouldn't see anything like this now on the websites, right? But back then, sometimes, you'd have some stuff that was kind of out there. And I remember he wrote this big, Ed Orgeron's first year at Ole Miss, 05. He wrote a preseason game-by-game prediction article. And man, it was wild. It was like Brent Schaefer threw seven touchdowns against Alabama. The score, I mean, Ole Miss couldn't score at all that year. They had a pretty good defense, but they couldn't score. And I think if you'd have done his predictions, they averaged 41 points per game. But instead of going through and saying, well, this is why this matchup is favorable on paper or anything like that, qualifying it, it was basically just because everybody believed in Coach O. And it eight different games that they won. I mean, I think he predicted 11-1. Just because they were down in this game by three touchdowns and they believed in Coach O and came back and won. And look, I believe in Coach Orgeron. I love Coach Orgeron, but man, I was so that you can cross into that territory when you're talking about intangibles. And so I wanted to make it clear that all of this is not an instant. The other thing we want in life now is certainty. You're not going to get any certainty in college football. Believe me, trust me. I just watched on Instagram before we came up here when I was loading the morning minute from Four Quarter Friday. Good job, Rob. I watched, they had a highlight of the 2011 Auburn South Carolina game. Trust me, after watching, remembering all the plays in that one, I was there. It's a pretty significant day, both for the Gamecocks and my life, to be honest. But, October 1st, 2011, I'll never forget it. But that game, because of the aftermath, personally in that one, I kind of forgotten how that game flowed back and forth. It was an interception fest. Of course, Steven Garcia didn't have his best game, and we know what happened after that. And I don't want to talk about that. But and the way it ended, there was 2 seconds on the clock. Carolina was at the 27-yard line. It could have kicked the field goal and tied it. There were missed extra points. I mean, it was Auburn. Look, I mean, it was. I don't know how Auburn won that game. Looking back on it, Carolina clearly was the better team. Clearly, they gave the ball to Michael Dwyer, I think, 41 times, and won 16-13. So trust me, if you're looking for certainty in college football, you're not going to get it. But we still like it. We still want it. We still want to know, hey, they're going to win, because it's up in, it's always going to be up in the air. So I'm not going to talk about why this means definitely they're going to win, because you can have all this you want and be 5-7. It just happens. But Beamer's been talking about whenever he's reviewed last season, he's talked about, well, we had some in the fourth quarter, you know, and this has been kind of the crux of the fourth quarter discussion from him is, oh, we just didn't have the leadership we had the year before. And that's true. Anytime you lose a Demetrius Knight, I mean, it wasn't just him, Debo Williams. I mean, all these older guys, you know, and you don't necessarily replace them with leadership. I think you replaced them with enough talent to win last year. That may affect you, you know. And look, to me, that's a secondary concern. I mean, I think we've talked it to death about the offensive plan. It was dead on arrival, basically. But Matt Anderson had an article today that talked about how, you know, Carolina had a lot of three and outs and things like that on offense, but they also had some that they couldn't finish drives. And maybe that has something to do with maturity and being intentional, being clutch, not getting nervous in a big moment, that kind of thing. And that certainly does. That certainly is applicable to winning and losing in college football. You know, so Beamer was asked about the team, what he's looking for. He said this group's very intentional. He likes that word intentional. And that means they're just kind of all about business and football and, you know, getting after it. And that's not necessarily just like, okay, there's a bunch of serious dudes here. But from what he's saying is, and what I've been told, is it translates to their performance in the weight room, off-season workouts, learning the playbook. Please. Yeah, that's good. And Beamer also mentioned that he was happy with where the offense was as far as learning a new scheme. I've seen somebody ask about that, and even talk about, you know, fans out there about, well, it may take a year for it's not going to, Kendall Brawl's offense isn't designed to take a year to learn, which is, you know, to me, the key to the season. I mean, that's, you know, no more of these offenses where you got to get, you know, trying to get better and better as the year goes on. You know, it just kind of is what it is. But Beamer mentioned he was happy with the progress and likes where they're at with that, but very intentional, you know. So the intentional part of it means that, you know, because look, and one thing we also don't talk about enough, these are human beings. These are no matter how professionalized everybody wants to make college sports, these are not pros. These are college kids. And college kids in general, you know, what do they? They sort of lack maturity. So when you can get a mature group, great, great, because that's different. Older players that have been there before, one thing they bring to the table is leadership, and leadership's a very broad term. Some guys lead by example. Some guys are rah-rah guys. Leadership, I think, means at its core, what most coaches want is accountability, like self-generated accountability on your roster. And, you know, just from interviews with players, Beamer saying what publicly available information, and then you combine that with some tidbits here and there. This group looks like it is about player accountability. Caleb Herring was talking about that. He's a new guy, but he's like, I got to make sure my guy Jacarius Peake, I mentioned the other day. We had a whole episode about how he was a natural leader. He's not been back out there, but he's going to get there. Beamer had basically the same update we had last week on Jacarius Peake and Dylan Stewart. Things are going well. So I guess the news would be they had their checkup with the doctor and it was all positive. But Peake is a natural leader on this team. You know, you got guys coming back. Lenore Sellers has been leading this offseason, you know, and it's just so helpful because, you know, again, these are still kids and you know, they're going to listen to their coaches and stuff like that. But, you know, peer pressure is still a thing, right? You know, you feel peer pressure to do the right thing. You got your brother beside you that, when it gets tough and maybe you have a bad play, he's there to pick you back up. When you know, maybe loaf, you know, you don't want to disappoint your teammates, right? You don't want to, and when you talk about a connected team, which you hear that at South Carolina all the time, you know, that's what that means is, hey, you know, we're going to kind of police ourselves a little bit here. And that way the coaches don't have to, you know, hellfire and brimstone all over us more than they already do. And that helps you win. It helps you in the fourth quarter. Beamer's been talking about the fourth quarter. South Carolina, until last year, when they were awful in the fourth quarter, they've been pretty good in the fourth quarter under Shane Beamer. Harrison on the bigspur.com, Harrison Lutheran had a really good piece about that. It just really didn't start trending in the opposite direction in the fourth until last year. And it was weird because, I mean, I think the defense did get worn down because of the offense, but the defense was put in impossible situations. But if you really dig into it, it was just the same old, same old. Can't score. Can't score. Can't score. And even when they'd get drives going, they couldn't score. LSU was like that. LSU game, which Beamer talked about, they had in the fourth quarter, they missed it twice, went for it on fourth down twice and missed. You just can't do that. You got to get points when you get drives going in college football. So hopefully that changes, but hopefully the maturity and leadership and the ability to dig deep doesn't. I mean, think about the Clemson and Missouri games at the end of 2024. And really, the Virginia Tech game in the opener last year. Virginia Tech gets some things going and scores. To say they get a busted coverage and score, pass along. I mean, they could have won the football game. And they didn't. Carolina got the punt return, they got the long pass. Sellers kind of ran off the clock with some heroic plays in Atlanta, and they won. So it really continued through that, and then Vandy, it all came crashing down and never got better. But in the fourth quarter, you think about Missouri, who had Carolina dead to rights. Leadership, man. They got back out there. They weren't worried. They went and got it. Clemson, all day long, it was like, you kind of started thinking, well, gosh, that first drive they fumbled, Sellers threw an interception. I mean, how much this looks like, it may just be Clemson's day to win the game. And of course, Lenoris took off and scored. And then lo and behold, here comes Cade Klubnik down the field. And who picked off the pass? Demetrius Knight. And there's a resilience that happens. With teams that have leadership, and older teams generally have leadership. It's not just older players that are going to be playing for the Gamecocks this year and counting on the freshman class. A lot of 6-7 guys are going to be out there, maybe more. It's a small class numbers wise as far as individuals, but it's got a lot of quality in it. And so, you think about a Jazavian Currents or a Julian Walker, maybe a Darius Gray. Kazi Barnes, Tristan Lewis in the backfield. Those guys are the defensive backfield. Those are all guys. Maybe Sequel Patterson plays at receiver. I mean, who knows? But those are all guys that are athletically able to help the team. And what Beamer said yesterday was that's a very intentional workmanlike group as well. They're different than normal freshmen. Well, freshmen that are different are the ones that normally can handle getting on the field. In a college football game at the SEC level and thriving. And then it's exciting when you think about it because these are some dudes. These are talented. I mean, physically they make them. Julian Walker's the biggest edge on the roster. Jazavian Currents, we talked about 6'4", 210 right there. Tristan Lewis and Kazi Barnes are 162, 207, 162, 206 at corner. And Hurt Lewis was very physical. I mean, those are two good sized corners for freshmen. And size does matter when you're talking about freshmen because you can't just get pushed around out there, dude. So, anyway, so the freshmen being mature and then having access to leadership with older players, I think that's a positive mix. Intangibles do win. And I'll give you an example. And they won the national championship last year. The Indiana football debate of 2025 will go on forever. But one thing that team, you cannot argue didn't, I mean, you can say, well, they were just coached well, and they were. And then you can say, well, they developed their players talent-wise, and they did. And well, the player for player, they weren't that talented. I don't agree with that. I think their talent level was enough. I mean, it's not like, again, you remember I talked about just now, you don't want to get pushed around out there. Well, they didn't. Really good offensive line, too. But what they were is they had intangibles. They would not relent. They went on the field every game, no matter who the opponent was, thinking they were going to kick their face in. And guess what? Alabama and Oregon, there aren't two battered teams in college, better, sorry, better programs in college football than the Ducks and the Crimson Tide. You know, I mean, you look at those two scores in the Rose Bowl and then in the Peach Bowl, 38-3 and 56-22. I mean, if you'd have told me, and if you'd have told me before last year's playoff, hey, Indiana's going to play Bama, and you know, or just, I'm sorry, because it wouldn't make sense if they lost. They wouldn't have advanced. But if you just said, you know, Indiana, Oregon, Indiana, Bama, I'd say, okay, and one's 38-3, one's 56-22. I'd have said, well, 38-3 would be Bama over Indiana. And because I'd just, they just run all over them. And then 56-22 would be Oregon. Well, those scores were reversed. And then they had enough to beat probably a top two or three roster and a hot, you know, Miami was this year's Ohio State, this past year's Ohio State. And to beat them on their home field, even though it wasn't, I mean, Indiana probably has 70% of the fans there. But it was, that's a study in intent, man, the manifestation, if you will, of intangibles and how that can relate to winning. Because you just do not relent. You just step on the field with that mindset every single time, and you're consistent with it. And older teams are able to do that because of the maturity factor. And if you have mature freshmen, they come along for the ride, and it works, right? It works. So all of this is very positive as it relates to the bottom line of winning. Now, if they don't win, it doesn't mean anything. But you know, I think that you know some of the mistakes maybe last year that reared their ugly head time and time again. You know, those the, there's two ways to correct them: either the coach corrects it in practice or on the fly during the games, or the players, you know, getting somebody's butt, and that's football. And I think that when you look at this roster right now and the experience factor, and then throw in the freshman thing, I think there's a the makings of having a team that steps on the field every time with that mindset. Doesn't mean they're not going to lose. And the bottom line here too is we won't know if this manifests until the season starts, and maybe probably not. Right, not till week three, week four, probably week three. I'm not going to disrespect Mississippi State. I think that's a game the Gamecocks should win, but it's still SEC play. You know, starting with Kent and Towson, you know, there's been teams, gosh, I remember in 2022, Carolina played, kind of got off to a pretty rotten start. Georgia kicked their teeth in. And then it was, I think, Charlotte and SC State back to back and got off to a bad start against Charlotte. 156-20, and then they moved that SC State game to a Thursday night, and they won 50-10. You know, those are two lopsided scores, and we're going to talk about and write about this later. That because the top two first two games are FCS and Group of Five opponents, Beamers actually put up some big scores on lower level competition, and that could be a function of the transfer portal. Just to be honest, it could be those teams aren't as good maybe as they once were. But it could also be that, you know, he's pretty good at making sure everybody plays, right? Or good at scoring points against those teams, right? But it you know, I can't sit there and say I couldn't tell you anything about the leadership on that team in 2022 based on those two games. And I probably, you know, you can look and say, well, were there sloppy moments, whatever. Because you're playing backups and stuff once you get to a certain point. And no matter how good your leadership is, your backups are gonna make, you know, they're backups. And you get out there and play, you know, maybe the matchup's a little better for the opponent. They're trying to. You miss a tackle, you know, you don't quite complete the pass, you don't quite run the right route, you don't quite make the cut if you're a running back. And when you talk about the blocks, right? So that happens. So I don't know how much we're gonna know. And I hope we don't, because like, look. If you start talking leadership and resilience in the fourth quarter against Kent State and Towson, that's not going to make anybody happy. I don't think that's a good thing at all. At all. So that's what you want. And you know, I think this too, thinking back to last year, we kept waiting for that team, I think, to do that, to respond late in the game. And it just never happened. It just never happened. I mean, the Kentucky game, even, that wasn't a. They got a couple of non-offensive touchdowns in that one, or defensive touchdowns in that one, had opened up a big lead, and then just kind of ran, you know, had that running drive that, you know, I guess the head coach and I, you know, thought differently of it. But I mean, they won that one. But you know, I guess Virginia Tech was really the only one where it kind of felt like Beamer's teams in the fourth quarter in most situations. But there's going to be a lot of them this year that are coming fourth quarter games. It's the SEC. And you look around the league, there's not a lot of blowouts. You know, there are some. I mean, Texas 9-3, 10-3 last year. Gosh, that lost to Ohio State, kept them out of the playoff. Very talented team, obviously, probably the best roster, second best roster in the league. Well, they barely beat Kentucky in overtime, 16-13. There's that Auburn Carolina score from 2011, by the way. And they had to rally from three, like 17 points down to beat Mississippi State at home. I mean, in Starkville. And so there's a difference between the Texas roster and the Kentucky roster. Still, it was a 3-point game. Florida's roster is better than those two teams, but Texas goes down there, plays a team that finished 4-8, and you know, got beat soundly at the Swamp, 29-21. That's the last we heard from Billy Napier, right? But so this happens, you know, in the SEC. You're going to have fourth quarter games. And everybody, all the good teams around South Carolina have. I mean, I remember lots of fourth quarter games in the Spurrier era that maybe shouldn't have even been close. And well, shoot, we got out of that one. But guys, going back to Holtz, Carolina plays Alabama at home. Wasn't the best Alabama team. It's the first time they'd beaten Alabama as an SEC school, though. Carolina couldn't stop the option all day. Tyler Watts, it was when Dennis Franchione was coaching, and Phil Petty led this comeback for the ages through a touchdown to Rod Trafford. Carolina won 37-36 at Williams-Brice on a sunny afternoon. I was there. But that game, you know, you're down. You got to come back. You got to come back. Beamer's teams have not always had situations where they've been able to come back, but they haven't come back often. And I think all roads there lead to offense. You know, you gotta get the offense going. But the intangible part of it, kind of in closing here, I think it's all positive. It's a reason to like the makeup of this team and all that. And again, it's gonna help in the fourth quarter. It's gonna help with mistakes. It's going to help the freshmen who are already displaying a mature approach come along, and they're going to need those guys this year. I mean, they're talented dudes. Some people think that great programs never play freshmen. That's not true. They do. When you recruit well, you got a stud. You're going to do it. Where would Ohio State's national championship team be a couple of years ago without Jeremiah Smith, true freshman? I don't know if there's anybody Jeremiah Smith level in this class, but there's some awfully good players that can help Carolina. Where would 2024 be without Dylan Stewart? Sometimes they're just the best on their roster, and you just do it. You just go, no matter how good. Alabama, under Nick Saban, started a ton of true freshmen and several on the offensive line, right? You're not, so that's a no-no. You're not supposed to do that. Now, as far as Carolina on the offensive line, if Darius Gray starts, I do believe he'll just simply be the best option they've got individually and within the group there. However, you know, looking back, I don't know that some of the folks out there, and maybe I was wrong because I always said that about Alabama. Well, lots of teams have true freshmen start. And this is one of those things where you got to kind of give Randy Clements and Jason Smith some grace and not lump them in with what happened before. Like, here we go again with a freshman on the offensive line. That would be the fourth straight year. But, you know, I thought Josiah probably was the best left tackle that they could come up with his first year. And so he started. You know, last year, I do think Shedd Surratt was one of the better ones. I think, though, when you look at the totality of it, the question would become through those 3 years, why true freshman, when you were, you know, in 23, when everybody got hurt, that's fine. That's out of necessity. Okay. But then you got to ask why Trevon Ball and Tree, in their second year, after getting all that experience, two highly rated guys, you know, Tree ends up redshirting, and then, and I know they missed some off season work or whatever, but You know, so there probably was. You can't, after 2 or 3 years, you couldn't sit there and say they were good at developing players. You know, they go get plug portal guys. And so I'm, you know, man, I don't know. Maybe there was something going on there. But anyway, that's another topic. I got off track at the end, right? But yeah, maturity, intentional, intangibles, MII, if you will, from Birdies with Beaner yesterday. We got the show coming back today, the third hour. Matt Anderson will join Phil Mullinax and I. I'll be in with Jamie Bradford and Matt for the second hour on ITG, and I'll get started at 10 a.m. Also, Four Quarter Friday, if this gets up before that, it's live at 9. We have Irmo head coach Aaron Brand on. If not, go back and check that out either on the Four Quarter Friday YouTube page, youtube.com/@Four Quarter Friday, or on podcast on Spotify and Apple, the Four Quarter Friday Show podcast. Check that out for high school sports. Lots of good stuff on fourquarterfriday.com and thebigspur.com today as well. All right, this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. You guys have a fantastic weekend. And next time I speak with you here, it'll be August. August means football practice is starting. And then we get real fired up about practice for 2 weeks, and then we're sick of practice, and then we wait for the September 5th opener this year as the Kent State Golden Flashes come to Williams-Brice for what could be a scorcher. All right, J.C. Sherbert's coffee's over for the week. I'm out. Holla.